This is a free Off The Ball podcast. For access to the best GAA analysis from the likes of Tommy Walsh, Richie Hogan, Seamus Flanagan, Sarah O'Donovan, Pat Ryan, Jim Gavin, Darren O'Sullivan, Stephen Rochford and David Hyland, become an Off The Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Welcome along to another episode of Sounds of the Summer. A look back on some of the biggest GAA stories which have dominated the Inter-County scene over the last few months. This podcast is looking back on some of the most gripping talking points throughout what was a sensational summer sport, and also looking ahead to what could come next. And this episode, All-Ireland winner with Armagh, Paddy Byrnes, joined Will O'Callaghan back in July ahead of the All-Ireland football semi-finals to talk about the year that was for the Orchard County, the Mayo Press and Marking the Cliffords.
Paddy, welcome back to Off The Ball. How are you keeping?
All good, Will. Nobody told me you were going to open with the no Ulster teams in the semi-finals, so had I known, I mightn't have been as quick to join, but good to be here, good to chat.
I didn't want to dig in and twist the knife, but then again, it's across the course of all the teams in Ulster, not just Armagh. And look, the funny thing about it is, and look, I hate to start in this way, but there will be party that will think if that goal doesn't drop in a skein, and you guys don't have to go down to Kerry a few days later, having lost out the game against Louth, it could well be you guys getting ready for a semi-final this weekend.
Yeah, there's plenty of what ifs when you look at the games coming up this weekend. But the goal is one moment of many in that game. You know, we didn't play to our potential that day. And to still even have been in the game at the stage that we were riding our luck a little bit. So we got what we deserved in that way, Will. And we only have ourselves to blame, I'd say.
Before we talk about the games themselves this weekend, I'm just keen to get a player's perspective on how the championship has been this year. Because obviously it's been that little bit different. And Jim McGuinness particularly was at Croke Park after the Dublin game. And he said it was very, very tricky because of how condensed the fixtures were together. It was hard to do more training. And particularly if you're coming off the back of a loss, to try and maybe recover your steam a week later can be quite tricky. Can you just give me a player's perspective on how this new championship with round one, 2A, 2B, 3A, 3B, how has it been?
Yeah, so I'm actually used to it from a club point of view. My club here in Down, Burn, we've been following that format for a number of years now, for as long as I've been playing here. So I'm well used to it, Will, and very much enjoy it. It gives a decent level of jeopardy at every stage, but as you say, you have to win through to really get the benefit of it. Once you lose, you're putting yourself at the mercy of a draw that you know, my own uncle pulled out Kerry away, which was particularly hurtful after we were beaten by Louth. But if you win your way through, like Louth have, and you know, like a few of the other teams, it's a great format because you have the benefit of playing against teams that are tired, who've come through the losing side. So it has its pluses and its minuses. I don't think if you were to speak to any player, most inter-county players, I don't think many would be calling for a lengthening of the championship. They like, players like the condensed nature because, you know, when your season ends end of July, you still have a bit of summer left. You still have some good weather to play with the club. So I think players are happy with the format, but the extra jeopardy is definitely makes it that little bit more difficult.
Yeah, and look, the provincials still have massive importance. We had Rory Grugan on with us after the Ulster final, and he was kind of saying, you know, despite the All-Ireland success in 2024, winning an Ulster medal, because it's so hard fought and some of the disappointments and penalty defeats and so on, he said that medal still had a massive importance in and of itself this year.
It did. You tried to tell yourself since 2024 and winning the All-Ireland that, you know, an Ulster would be a nice cherry on the icing on the cake, but you know, not that bothered about it, and tried to keep yourself focused on winning the All-Ireland. But it was only when the final whistle went and we had won it that kind of that release of emotion, that the pent up frustration of maybe those penalty shootout losses and extra time losses over the last 3 or 4 years, that you realise how important it was to you inside. Like Ulster's, you know, it felt like every year or every second year, and always kind of assumed when I was a teenager that if I ever was lucky enough to play for Armagh, I'd get a handful of Ulsters. But it became very apparent then that's not how things work. So it was Brilliant to finally get one.
Look, it's a good way to be as a kid. Like, as when you were probably 8 or 9, that's the period that Armagh are going up to, you know, make the breakthrough success. And as you said, so much success followed for the kind of 7 or 8 years that followed as well. That's a really good time to be an Armagh supporter, I would think.
It was, yeah. Some would call it naive, but and then obviously my early years in, we were Division 3, UU1 from Division 3 and Division 2. Not dissimilar to what Down have done for the last few years, and finally got our act together. I think COVID was actually a big, it was a big reset for us, a bit of a benefit, because it gave us that chance to catch up. I think in other teams, we trained very hard individually during that time, and it probably gave us a chance to catch up on teams who were getting an extra few months of training every year because they were staying together. And then we got back to where Armagh had been when I was a young fella. So very happy to have seen both sides of it, know the famine and the, I wouldn't quite call it a feast, but the decent sides helping.
Forgive me if I'm kind of oversimplifying here, but I was listening to the lads on the football pod, James O'Donoghue and Paddy Andrews, and they were trying to make sense of this season. And it's been a difficult thing to do because some teams who maybe didn't have form earlier in the year then just burst into form. We've had some crazy stories between Roscommon and Connacht, Westmeath's run throughout the year. Some of it kind of maybe defies the predictions we would have made earlier in the season. But one of the things they kind of considered about Armagh was it maybe a case a little bit that, like, you guys were going right at it after the league, you wanted to win a provincial championship, you really went for Ulster, and then it's difficult to maybe keep that type of high energy up throughout this championship as well. Is there anything in that, or is that something that you would have felt as a player?
I don't think I particularly felt that. Well, I think the 6 day turnaround is just it's hard to, you know, it's hard to go again 6 days after a defeat. And while we tried our best to get ourselves up for that game and we're well in it in the first half anyway against Kerry, it's a difficult thing to do. I think there that you could imply that if that was the train of thought that you took, that's implying that, you know, a Louth or somebody like that really shouldn't have beat us. But I think that actually teams like Louth in this case, they're just well in the mix now. You know, they've been doing the work for the last couple of years and incremental improvement, and you can't just assume that you're going to beat anyone in Division 2 or Division 1 because it's very much leveled off. You know, I don't think managing energy really explains it.
Is the benefit of going man to man that maybe you just as a management team think they can win all their individual battles? Is it so that maybe you've got more players freed up because you don't have players dropping into zones? Like, in theory, what would the benefit be to go man-to-man when, as you say, almost every team across the country now has got a system that's based around defending zones?
Yeah, like it is admirable from them, Will, that they're willing to do it. I would say it's a bit of a cop-out, but it seems to be a DNA thing with Mayo that it's just what they know and it's how they play. It's what they back themselves to do. Like, when Andy was playing himself, it's how they would have defended. And I suppose when we're talking about attacking set plays and the way teams can attack, if they're man-to-man, it means that, you know, if a team's setting up and trying to free up a sweeper, say the ball's going down one side of the pitch, and so a team brings a defender across from the opposite side to try and help out and close down the space, you're exposed to a quick switch of play and an easy score. So by staying man-to-man, Mayo reduced that exposure. But other than that, I just don't see the rationale behind not trying to defend a little bit more zonally.
Because of the array of forwards Kerry have at the moment, like the last day, you know, it's Dylan Gainey who does the damage and Clifford still gets his kind of traditional scores. We know how good Paddy Clifford is when it's unlocking defences in the last 2 or 3 games of the season. Like, how do you go about stopping this Kerry team then? Could tell us what Kieran Donnelly would have told you to do.
He told me to find out where David Clifford lives and maybe do something in his house. But Dylan Gainey's found that bit of form that his highlight reel probably showed that he had. So I think that's just the one extra little bit of magic now that does make that Kerry forward line particularly formidable. They were always obviously David and Paddy, and Paul Gainey being a ball winner there to set things up. That was always a scary prospect, but Dylan Gainey now this summer and the form that he's found does make them a concern. I looking at the Dublin defence, I don't think they can match up to all those Kerry forwards, and that is where teams inevitably fall down against Kerry, is that you put your best man marker on David Clifford. You maybe now will put your second best on Dylan Gainey, and if you'll have a man marker on Paddy Clifford, you'll possibly put somebody on Sean O'Shea if he starts, and then Paul Gainey could get a goal and 3 points. You know, you've only got so many man markers there that you can play, because the game is, you talked about transitions earlier as well. Well, the game's so fast and has so many transitions that you can't play more than two or three out and out defenders. And that means that there's going to be a marquee forward there for Kerry who is going to be marking somebody and licking his lips that he's got a good day coming.
The other night we were talking about Erling Haaland and how he kind of comes to life and the goal he scored in the weekend just gone by. The GA are now kind of pitch side where they've got the really nice cameras catching some of this. And I just saw again, Clifford's off the ball movement sometimes when you just have the camera focused on him. He must be an absolute nightmare to try and watch, because sometimes it looks like he's almost kind of drifted out of the game, or he's strolling Messi or Haaland style, and boom, once that ball comes into a position where he knows he can affect play, he just jumps out in front of you. So he's absolutely remarkable, isn't he?
Yeah, it's really, as a defender on him, part of the difficulty is you don't have a second to switch off mentally. You know, so by the time the game's over, if you've been marking him, you're exhausted physically, obviously, but your brain is tired, because you know that at any given time they are trying to get the ball in. And now they have the forward unit, as we've said, that can do damage, but that being said, they are trying to bring the ball to David any chance they get, and he's calling them to bring the ball to him every time. You know, you see him waving his hand, bring it to me. So you just have to be locked in the whole time, and even then, as locked in as you could be, you're going to need help. You're going to need that second defender trying to get across and back you up, because you know that he's going to try and burn you around the outside or take it on the loop and kick the score. So yeah, he's a tricky customer. That's definitely an understatement, I would say.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best GAA analysis from the likes of Tommy Walsh, Richie Hogan, Seamus Flanagan, Sarah O'Donovan, Pat Ryan, Jim Gavin, Darren O'Sullivan, Stephen Rochford, and David Hyland, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.